too? She hesitated, and her eyes searched mine, but when I would have moved toward her, she drew back, half frightened. Her lips parting a little, her breast lifting suddenly as she caught her breath. It isn't time for that now. Please. It stopped me, knowing what she said was true. You're sure you weren't trailed? She shook her head. I've been careful. Every day. This isn't the first day you looked for me? Oh, no. She looked at me, her eyes shadowed with worry. I was afraid you were lying somewhere bloody and suffering. Her eyes steadied me, noting the torn shirt, the pallor of my face. And you have been. Raleigh was good. He was very good. Then it was you who killed him. Who else? Canaval and Bodie Miller found him after they realized you were gone from the mesa where you pinned him down. Canaval was sure it had been you, but some of them thought it was the mountain boys. They've done no fighting for me, although they wanted to. You'd best start back. I've work to do.
But you're in no shape. You're sick.
She stared at me. I can still fight, I said. Tell your father you've seen me. Tell him the two-bar was given me in the presence of witnesses. Tell him his stock is to be off that range at once.
You forget that I am my father's daughter.
And my future wife.
I've promised no such thing, she flared. You know I'd never marry you. I'll admit you're attractive and you're a devil, but marry you? I'd die first.
Her breast heaved and her eyes flashed, and I laughed at her. Tell your father, though, and ask him to withdraw from this fight before it's too late. Swinging into the saddle, I added, It's already too late for you. You love me, and you know it. Tell Morgan Park that, and tell him I'm coming back to break him with my hands. Chapter 5 Riding into Hatton's Point, I was a man well known. Raleigh Pinder was dead, and they knew whose gun had downed him. McLaren's riders had been held off and made a laughing stock, and I had taken up Ball's fight to hold his ranch. Some men hated me for this, some admired me, and many thought me a fool. All I knew was a horse between my knees, the guns on my thighs, and the blood of me pounding. My buckskin lifted his head high and moved down the dusty street like a dancer, for riding into this town was a challenge to them all. They knew it, and I knew it. Leaving my horse behind Mother O'Hara's, I walked to the saloon and went in. By then I'd taken time to shave, and although the pallor of sickness was on my face, there was none in my eyes or heart. It did me good to see their eyes widen and to hear my spurs jingle as I walked to the bar. Rye, I said, the best you've got. Key Chapin was there, and sitting with him, Morgan Park. The big man's eyes were cold as they stared at me. I'm buying, gentlemen, I said. And that includes you, Morgan Park. Although you slug a man when his hands are down. Park blinked. It had been a long time since anyone had told him off to his face. And you, Keith Chapin, it has always been my inclination to encourage freedom of the press and to keep my public relations on a good basis. And today I might even offer you a news item, something to read like this. Matt Saber of the Two Bar was in town Friday afternoon. Matt is recovering from a bullet wound incurred during a minor dispute with Raleigh Pinder, but is returning to the Two Bar to take up where he left off. Chapin smiled.
That will be news to Jim Pinder. He didn't expect you back.
He should have, I assured him. I'm back to punish every murdering skunk who killed old man Ball. All eyes were on me now, and Park was staring, not knowing what to make of me.
Do you know who they are?
Chapin asked curiously. Definitely, I snapped the word. Every man of them, I shifted my eyes to Park, is known with one exception. When Ball was dying, he named a man to me. Only I'm not sure.
Who?
Demanded Chapin. Morgan Park, I said.
The big man came to his feet with a lunge. His brown face was ugly with hatred.
That's a lie, he roared. My shoulders lifted. Probably a misunderstanding. I'll not take offense at your language, Mr. Park, because it is a dead man you're calling a liar, and not I. Ball might have meant that one of your writers, a man named Lyell, was there. He died before he could be questioned. If it is true, I'll kill you after I whip you.
Whip me? Park's bellow was amazed. Whip me? Why, you...
Unfortunately, I'm not sufficiently recovered from my wounds to do it today. But don't be impatient. You'll get your belly full of it when the time comes. Turning my back on him, I lifted my glass. Gentlemen, your health. And then I walked out of the place. There was a good, rich smell of cooked food and coffee when I opened the door of Mother O'Hara's.
Ah, it's you then, and still alive. Things ain't what they used to be around here. Warned off by McLaren, threatened by Jim Pinder, beaten by Morgan Park, and you're still here?
Still here and staying, Katie O'Hara, I said, grinning at her. And I've just said that and more to Morgan Park.
There has been men die, and you've had the killing of some.
That's the truth, Katie, and I'd rather it never happened, but it's a hard country, and small chance for a man who hesitates to shoot when the time comes. All the same, it's a good country, this. A country where I plan to stay and grow my children, Katie. I'll go back to the Two Bar and build my home there.
You think they'll let you? You think you can keep it?
They'll have no choice. Behind me a door closed, and the voice of Rudd McLaren was saying,
We'll have a choice. Get out of the country while you're alive.
The arrogance in his voice angered me, so I turned and faced him. Kennebell and Morgan Park had come with him. The Two Bar is my ranch, I said, and I'll be staying there. Do you think yourself a king that you can dictate terms to a citizen of a free country? You've let a small power swell your head, McLaren. You think you have power when all you have is money. If you weren't the father of the girl I'm to marry, McLaren, I'd break you just to show you this is a free country, and we want no barons here. His face mottled and grew hard.
Marry my daughter? You? I'll see you in hell first.
If you see me in hell, McLaren, I said lightly, you'll be seeing a married man, because I'm marrying Olga, and you can like it or light as shuck. I expect you were a good man once, but there's some that cannot stand the taste of power, and you're one. My eyes shifted to Morgan Park. And there's another beside you. He has let his beef get him by too long. He uses force where you use money. But his time is running out, too. He couldn't break me when he had the chance. And when my time comes, I'll break him. More than one face in the room was approving, even if they glared at me, these two. The trouble is obvious, I continued. You've never covered enough country. You think you're sitting in the center of the world, whereas you're just a couple of two-bit operators in a forgotten corner. Turning my back on them, I helped myself to the Irish stew. McLaren went out, but Park came around the table and sat down, and he was smiling. The urge climbed up in me to beat the big face off him and down him in the dirt. As he had me. He was wider than me by inches and taller. The size of his wrists and hands was amazing. Yet he was not all beef, for he had brains, and there was trouble in him, trouble for me. He was there to eat and said nothing to me. When I returned to my horse, there was a man sitting there. He looked up, and I was astonished at him. His face was like an unhappy monkey, and he was without a hair to the top of his head. Near as broad in the shoulders as Morgan Park, he was shorter than me by inches.
"By the look of you," he said, "you'll be Matt Saber."
"You're right, man. What is it about?"
"Katie O'Hara was telling me it was a man you needed at the Two Bar. Now, I'm a handy all-around man, Mr. Saber. A rough sort of gunsmith, hostler, blacksmith, carpenter, good with an axe, and I shoot a bit. No Cornish-style wrestling, and I'm afraid of no man when I've my two hands before me. I'm not so handy with a short gun, but I've a couple of guns of my own that I handled nice."
He got to his feet, and he could have been nothing over 5'4", but weighed all of 200 pounds, and his shirt at the neck showed a massive chest covered with black hair and a neck like a column of oak.
"The fact that you've the small end of a fight appeals to me."
He jerked his head toward the door.
"Katie has said I'm to go to work for you, and she'd not take it kindly if I did not."
"You're Katie's man, then?" His eyes twinkled amazingly.
"Katie's man? I'm afraid there's no such. She's a broth of a woman, that one."
He grinned up at me.
"Is it a job I have?"
"When I've the ranch back," I agreed, "you've a job."
"Then let's be getting it back. Will you wait for me? I've a mule to get."
The mule was a dun with a face that showed all the wisdom, meanness, and contrariness that have been the traits of the mule since time began. With a tow sack behind the saddle and another before him, we started out of town.
"My name is Brian Mulvaney," he said. "Call me what you like."
He grinned widely when he saw me staring at the butts of the two guns that projected from his boot tops.
"These," he said, "are the Neil bootleg pistol, altered by me to suit my taste. The caliber is 35, but good. Now this..."
From his waistband he drew a gun that lacked only wheels to make an admirable artillery piece.
"This was a Mills 75 caliber. Took me 2 months of work, off and on. But I've converted her to a 4-shot revolver. A fine gun," he added.
All of 17 inches long, it looked fit to break a man's wrists. But Mulvaney had powerful hands and arms. No man ever hit by a chunk of lead from that gun would need a doctor. 4 horses were in a corral at the Two Bar, and the men were strongly situated behind a log barricade. Mulvaney grinned at me.
"What do you suppose I've in this sack, laddie?"
he demanded, his eyes twinkling.
"I, who was a miner also."
"Powder?"
"Exactly. In those newfangled sticks. Now, unless it makes your head ache too much, help me cut a few of these sticks in half."
When that was done, he cut the fuses very short and slid caps into the sticks of powder.
"Come on now, me boy, and we'll slip down close under the cover of darkness, and you'll see them taking off like you never dreamed."
Crawling as close as we dared, each of us lit a fuse and hurled a stick of powder. My own stick must have landed closer to them than I planned, for we heard a startled exclamation followed by a yell. Then a terrific explosion blasted the night apart. Mulvaney's followed, and then we hastily hurled a third and a fourth. One man lunged over the barricade and started straight for us. The others had charged the corral. The man headed our way suddenly saw us, and wheeling, he fled as if the devil was after him. 4 riders, gripping only mane holds, dashed from the corral, and then there was silence. Mulvaney got to his feet, chuckling.
"For guns, they'd have stood until hell froze over.
But the powder, the flying rocks and dust scared them good. And you've your ranch back.
We had eaten our midday meal the next day when I saw a rider approaching. It was Olga McLaren. "Nice to see you," I said, aware of the sudden tension her presence always inspired. She was looking toward the foundation we had laid for the new house. It was on a hill with a long sweep of cottonwood wash before it.
"You should be more careful," she said. "You had a visitor last night."
"We just took over last night," I objected. "What do you mean?"
"Morgan. He was out here shortly after our boys got home. He met the bunch you stampeded from here."
"He's been puzzling me," I admitted. "Who is he? Did he come from around here?"
"I don't know. He's not talkative. But I've heard him mention places back east. I know he's been in Philadelphia and New York, but nothing else about him, except that he goes to Salt Lake and San Francisco occasionally."
"Not back east?"
"Never since we've known him."
"You like him?" She looked up at me.
"Yes, Morgan can be very wonderful. He knows a lot about women and things that please them."
There was a flicker of laughter in her eyes.
"He probably doesn't know as much about them as you."
"Me?" I was astonished. "What gave you that idea?"
"You approached the first day. You knew it would excite my curiosity, and a man less sure of himself would never have dared. If you knew no more about women than most Western men, you would have hung back, wishing you could meet me. Or you would have got drunk to work up your courage."
"I meant what I said that day. You're going to marry me."
"Don't say that. Don't even think it. You've no idea what you're saying or what it would mean."
"Because of your father?" I looked at her. "Or Morgan Park?"
"You take him too lightly, Matt. I think he is utterly without scruple. I believe he would stop at nothing."
There was more to come, and I was interested.
"There was a young man here from the East," she continued, "and I liked him. Knowing Morgan, I never mentioned him in Morgan's presence. Then one day he asked me about him. He added that it would be better for all concerned if the man did not come around anymore." Inadvertently, I mentioned the young man's name, Arnold Darcy. "When he heard that name, he became very disturbed. Who was he? Why had he come here? Had he asked any questions about anybody? Or described anybody he might be looking for?" "He asked me all those questions, but at the same time, I thought little about it. Afterward, I began to believe that he was not merely jealous. Right then, I decided to tell Arnold about it when he returned."
"And did you?" There was a shadow of worry on her face.
"No, he never came again."
She looked quickly at me.
"I've often thought of it. Morgan never mentioned him again, but somehow Arnold hadn't seemed like a man who would frighten easily."
Later, when she was mounting to leave, I asked her, "Where was Darcy from? Do you remember?"
"Virginia, I believe. He had served in the army, and before coming west, had been working in Washington."
Watching her go, I thought again of Morgan Park. He might have frightened Darcy away, but I could not shake off the idea that something vastly more sinister lay behind it. And Park had been close to us during the night. If he had wanted to kill me, it could have been done. But apparently he wanted me alive. Why?
"Mulvaney," I suggested, "if you can hold this place, I'll ride to Silver Reef and get off a couple of messages."
He stretched his huge arms and grinned at me.
"Do you doubt it? I'll handle it or them. Go and have yourself a time."
In the morning, I was in the saddle again. Chapter 6 High noon, in a mountain shaped like flame. Beyond the mountain and around it was a wide land with no horizons, but only the shimmering heat waves that softened all lines to vagueness and left the desert an enchanted land, without beginning and without end. As I rode, my mind studied the problem created by the situation around Cottonwood Wash. There were at least three and possibly four sides to the question. Rudd McLaren with his Bar M, Jim Pender with his CP, and myself with the 2-bar. The fourth possibility was Morgan Park. Olga's account of Arnold Darcy's disappearance had struck a chord of memory. During 10 years of my life, I had been fighting in foreign wars, and there had been a military observer named Darcy, a Major Leo Darcy, who had been in China during the fighting there. It stuck in my mind that he had a brother named Arnold. It was a remote chance, yet a possibility. Why did the name upset Park? What had become of Arnold? Where did Park come from? Pender could be faced with violence and handled with violence. McLaren might be circumvented. Morgan Park worried me. Silver Reef lay sprawled in haphazard comfort along a main street and a few cross streets. There were the usual frontier saloons, stores, churches, and homes. The sign on the Elkhorn Saloon caught my attention. Crossing to it, I pushed through the door into the dim interior. While a bartender served me, I glanced around, liking the feel of the place. "Rye?" The smooth-pated bartender squinted at me. "Uh-huh. How's things in the mines?"
"So-so, but you ain't no miner."
He glanced at my cowhand's garb and then at the guns in their tied-down holsters.
"This here's a quiet town. We don't see many gun handlers around here. The place for them is over east of here."
"Hatton's Point?"
"Yeah. I hear the Bar M and CP both are hiring hands. Couple of hombres from there rode into town a few days ago. One of them was the biggest man I ever did see."
Morgan Park and Silver Reef. That sounded interesting, but I kept a tight rein on my thoughts and voice. "Did he say anything about what was going on over there?"
"Not to me. The feller with him, though, he was inquiring around for the Slade boys. Guns licks both of them." "The big feller, he never come in here at all. I seen him on the street a couple of times. But he went to the Wells Fargo Bank and down the street to see that shyster Jake Booker."
"You don't seem to like Booker."
"Him? He's plumb no good. The man's a crook."
Once started on Booker, the bartender told me a lot. Morgan Park had been in town before, but never came to the Elkhorn. He confined his visits to the back room of a dive called the Sump, or occasional visits to the office of Jake Booker. The only man who ever came with him was Lyell. Leaving the saloon, I sent off my telegram to Leo Darcy. Then I located the office of Booker, spotted the Sump, and considered the situation. Night came swiftly, and miners crowded the street, a good-natured shoving, pushing, laughing throng, jamming the saloons and drinking. The crowd relaxed me with its rough good humor, and for the night I fell into it, drifting, joking, listening. Turning off the street near Louder's store, I passed the street lamp on the corner and for an instant was outlined in its radiance. From the shadows, flame stabbed. There was a tug at my sleeve and then my own gun roared. And as the shot sped, I went after it. A man lunged from the side of the store and ran staggeringly toward the alley behind it. Pistol ready, I ran after him. He wheeled, slipped, and was running again. He brought up with a crash against the corral bars and fell. He was crawling to his feet, and I caught a glimpse of his face in the glow from the window. It was Lyell. One hand at his throat, I jerked him erect. His face was gaunt, and there was blood on his shirt front. He had been hit hard by my sudden, hardly aimed shot. Got you, didn't I?
Yes, damn you. And I missed. Put me down.
Lowering him to the ground, I dropped to one knee. I'll get a doctor. I saw a sign up the street. He grabbed my sleeve.
Ain't no use. I feel it. You got me good. Anyway,
he stared at me.
Why should you get a doc for me?
I shouldn't. You were in a gang killed ball. His eyes bulged.
No, no, I wasn't there. He was a good old man. I wasn't in that crowd.
Was Morgan Park there? His eyes changed, veiled.
Why would he be there? That wasn't his play.
What's he seeing Booker for? What about Sam Slade? Footsteps crunched on the gravel, and a man carrying a lantern came up the alley. Get a doctor, will you? This man's been shot. The man started off at a run, and Lyell lay quietly. A tough, unshaven man with brown eyes. He breathed hoarsely for several minutes while I uncovered the wound.
The Slades are to get Cannibal. Park wants you for himself.
What does he want? Range?
No, he wants money.
The doctor hurried up with a lantern carrier. Watching him start work, I backed away and disappeared in the darkness. If anybody knew anything about Park's plans, it would be Booker. And I had an idea I could get into Booker's office. Booker's office was on the second floor of a frame building, reached by an outside stairway. Once up there, a man would be fairly trapped if anyone came up those stairs. Down the street, a music box was jangling, and the town showed no signs of going to sleep. Studying that stairway, I liked no part of it. Booker had many friends here, but I had none, and going up there would be a risk. Then I remembered all the other times I'd had no friends, so I hitched my guns easier on my thighs and went across the street. Going up the steps two at a time, I paused at the door. Locks were no problem to a man of my experience, and a minute later I was inside a dark office, musty with stale tobacco. Swiftly I checked the tray on the desk, the top drawer, and then the side drawers, lighting my exploration with a stump of candle. Every sense alert, ears attuned to the slightest sound. I worked rapidly, suddenly coming to an assayer's report. No location was mentioned, no notation on the sheet, but the ore had been rich, amazingly rich. Then among some older papers at the bottom of a drawer, I found a fragment of a letter from Morgan Park, signed with his name. You have been recommended to me as a man of discretion who could turn over a piece of property for a quick profit and who could handle negotiations with a buyer. I'm writing for an appointment and will be in Silver Reef on the 12th. It is essential that this business remain absolutely confidential. It was little enough, but a hint. I left the assayer's report, but pocketed the letter. The long ride had tired me, for my wounds, while much improved, had robbed me of strength. Dousing the candle, I returned it to its shelf. And then I heard a low mutter of voices and steps on the stair. Backing swiftly, I glanced around and saw a closed door that must lead to an inner room. Stepping through it, I closed it just in time. It was a room used for storage. Voices sounded and a door closed. A match scratched and light showed under the door.
Nonsense! Probably got in some drunken brawl. You're too suspicious, Morgan. Maybe, but a man worries me. He rides too much. And he may get to nosing around and find something. Did you see Lyell before he died? No. He shot first, though. Some fool saw him take a bead on somebody. This other fella followed it up and killed him.
The crabbed voice of Booker interrupted.
Forget him. Forget Saber. My men are lined up, and they have the cold cash ready to put on the line. We haven't any time for child's play. I've done my part, and now it's up to you. Get Saber out of the way and get rid of McLaren.
That's not so easy, Park objected stubbornly. McLaren is never alone, and if anybody ever shot at him, he'd turn the country upside down to find the man. And after he's killed, the minute we step in, suspicion will be diverted to us.
Nonsense, Booker replied irritably. Nobody knows we've had dealings. They'll have to settle the estate, and I'll step in as representative of the buyers. Of course, if you were married to the girl, it would simplify things. What's the matter? Saber cutting in there, too?
Shut up. Park's voice was ugly. If you ever say a thing like that again, I'll wring you out like a dirty towel, Booker.
I mean it. You do your part, Booker said, and I'll do mine. The buyers have the money, and they're ready. They won't wait forever.
A chair scraped, and Park's heavy steps went to the door and out. There was a faint squeak of a cork twisting in a bottleneck, the gargle of a poured drink, then the bottle and glass returned to the shelf. The light vanished and a door closed. Then footsteps grated on the gravel below. Only a minute behind him, I hurried from the vicinity, then paused, sweating despite the cool air. Thinking of what I'd heard, I retrieved my horse and slipped quietly out of town. Bedded down among the clustering cedars, I thought of that, and then of Olga, the daughter of McLaren, of her soft lips, the warmth of her arms, the quick, proud lift of her chin. Coming home to Cottonwood Wash in the two-bar, with the wind whispering through the greasewood and rustling the cottonwood leaves, I kept a careful watch, but saw nobody until Mulvaney himself stepped into sight.
"Had any trouble?" I asked him. "Trouble? None here," he replied. "Some men came by, but the sound of my Spencer drove them away again."
He walked to the door.
"There's grub on the table. How was it in Silver Reef?"
"A man killed."
"Be careful, lad. There's too many dying."
When I had explained, he nodded.
"Did they know it was you?"
"I doubt it." It felt good to be back on my own place again, seeing the white-faced cattle browsing in the pasture below, seeing the water flowing to irrigate the small garden we'd started.
"You're tired," Mulvaney studied me. "But you look fit. You've thrown a challenge in the teeth of Park. You'll be backing it up?"
"Backing it up?" My eyes must have told what was in me. "That's one man I want, Mulvaney. He had me down and beat me, and I'll not live free until I whip him or he whips me fair."
"He's a power of a man, lad. I've seen him lift a barrel of whiskey at arm's length overhead. It will be a job to whip him."
"Ever box any, Mulvaney? You told me you'd wrestled Cornish style."
"What Irishman hasn't boxed a bit? It is a sparring mate you're wanting." "Sure, and it would be good to get the leather on my mollies again."
For a week we were at it. Every night we boxed, lightly at first, then faster. He was a brawny man, a fierce slugger, and a powerful man in the clinches. On the seventh day we did a full 30 minutes without a break. And in the succeeding days my strength returned and my speed grew greater. The rough-and-tumble part of it I loved. Nor was I worried about Morgan's knowing more tricks than I. The waterfronts are the place to learn the dirty side of fighting. I would use everything I'd learned there, if Morgan didn't fight fair. It was after our 10th session with the gloves that Mulvaney stripped them off and shook his head admiringly.
"Faith, lad, you've a power of muscle behind that wallop of yours. That last one came from nowhere, and I felt it clean to my toes.
Never did I believe a man lived that could hit like that.
Thanks, I said. I'm riding to town tomorrow.
To fight him?
No, to see the girl, Olga McLaren, to buy supplies and perhaps to ride him a little. I want him furious before we fight. I want him mad, mad and wild. He nodded wisely at me.
It'll help, for no man can fight unless he keeps his head. But be careful, lad. Remember, they're gunning for you. And there's nothing that would better please them than to see you dead on the ground.
When a buckskin was watered, I returned him to the hitch rail and walked into the saloon. Hatton's Point knew that Lyell was dead, but they had no idea who had done it. Key Chapin was the first man I met, and I looked at him, wondering on which side he stood. He looked at me curiously and motioned toward the chair across the table from him. Dropping into it, I began to build a smoke.
Well, Saber, you're making quite a name for yourself.
I shrugged. That's not important. All I want is a ranch.
All?
And a girl.
One may be as hard to get as the other.
Maybe. Anyway, I've made a start on the ranch. In fact, I have the ranch and intend to keep it.
Heard about Lyell?
Killed, wasn't he? Somewhere west of here?
At Silver Reef.
It's a peaceful, quiet place in spite of being a boom town. And they have a sheriff over there who believes in keeping it peaceful. They tell me he's working hard to find out who killed Lyell. It might be anybody. There was a rumor that he was one of the men in the raid on the Ball Ranch,
and which you promised to bury on the spot.
What this was building up to, I did not know, but I was anxious to find out just where Chapin stood. He would be a good friend to have and a bad enemy, for his paper had a good deal of influence around town. You told me when I first came here that the town was taking sides. Which is your side? He hesitated, toying with his glass.
That's a harder question to answer since you came, he replied frankly.
I will say this. I am opposed to violence. I believe now is the time to establish a peaceful community, and I believe it can be done. For that reason, I'm opposed to the CP outfit, whose code is violence. And McLaren? He hesitated again.
McLaren can be reasoned with at times. Stubborn, yes, but only because he has an exaggerated view of his own rightness.
It is not easy to prove him wrong, but it can be done. And Park? He looked at me sharply, a cool, measuring glance, as if to see what inspired the remark. Then he said,
Morgan Park is generally felt to see things as McLaren does.
Is that your opinion? He did not answer me, frowning as he stared out the door. Key Chapin was a handsome man, and an able one. I could understand how he felt about law and order. Basically, I agreed with him, but when I'm attacked, I can't take it lying down. Look, Chapin, I leaned over the table. I've known a dozen frontier towns tougher than this one. To each came law and order, but it took a fight to get them. The murderers, cheats, and swindlers must be stamped out before the honest citizens can have peace. And it's peace that I'm fighting for. You, more than anybody else, can build the situation to readiness for it with your paper. Write about it. Get the upright citizens prepared to enforce it once this battle is over. He nodded, then glanced at me.
What about you? You're a gunfighter. In such a community, there is no place for such a man.
That made me grin. Chapin, I never drew a gun on a man in my life who didn't draw on me first, or try to. And while I may be a gunfighter, I'm soon to be a rancher and a solid citizen. Count on me to help.
Even to stopping this war?
What war? Ball had a ranch. He was a peaceful old man who wanted no trouble from anyone. But he was weaker than the Bar M or the CP, so he died. He turned the ranch over to me on the condition that I keep it. If protecting one's property is war, then we'll have it for a long time.
You could sell out.
Run? Is that what you mean? I've never ducked out of a good fight yet, Chapin, and never will. When they stop fighting me, I'll hang up my guns. Until then, I shall continue to fight. Filling my glass, I added, "Don't look at the overall picture so long that you miss the details."
"What do you mean?"
"Look for motives. What are the origins of this fight? I'd start investigating the participants, and I mean neither McLaren nor Pender." Getting up, I put my hat on my head and added, "Ever hear of a man named Booker at Silver Reef? A lawyer?
He's an unmitigated scoundrel, and whatever he does, he's apt to get away with. If there's a loophole in the law he doesn't know, then nobody knows it."
"Then find out why he's interested in this fight. And when the Slade boys drift into this country, ask yourself why they're here. Also, ask yourself why Morgan Park is meeting Booker in secret." Olga was not in town, so I turned the buckskin toward the Bar M. A cowhand with one foot bandaged was seated on the doorstep when I rode up. He stared, his jaw dropping. "Howdy," I said calmly, taking out the makings. "I'm visiting on the ranch and don't want any trouble. As far as you boys are concerned, I have no hard feelings."
"You've no hard feelings. What about me? You darn near shot my foot off."
I grinned at him. "Next time you'll stay undercover. Anyway, what are you griping about? You haven't done a lick of work since it happened." Somebody chuckled. I looked around and saw Cannavale.
"I reckon he did it on purpose, Saber." "Excuse?"
the injured man roared, disgusted. He rose and limped off.
"What you want here, Saber?" Cannavale asked, still smiling.
"Just visiting."
"Sure you're welcome?"
"No, I'm not sure. But if you're wondering if I came looking for trouble, I didn't. If trouble comes to me on this ranch now, it'll be because I'm pushed, and pushed hard. If you're the guardian angel of peace, just relax. I'm courting."
"Rudd won't take kindly to that. He may have me order you off."
"All right, Cannibal. If he does and you tell me to go, I'll go. Only one thing, you keep Park off me. I'm not ready for him, and when it comes, I'd rather she didn't see it."
"Fair enough."
He tossed his cigarette into the yard.
"You'll not be bothered under those circumstances. Only,"
he grinned and his eyes twinkled,
"you might be wrong about Olga. She might like to see you tangle with Park."
Starting up the steps, I remembered something. "Cannibal!" He turned sharply, ready on the instant. "A friendly warning," I said. "Some of the people who don't like me also want your boss out of here. To get him out, you have to go first. If you hear of the Slades in this country, you'll know they've come for you and your boss." His eyes searched mine.
"The Slades?"
"Yeah, for you and McLaren. Somebody's saving me for dessert." He was standing there looking after me when I knocked. Inside, a voice answered that set my blood pounding.
"Come in."
Chapter 7. As I entered, there was an instant when my reflection was thrown upon the mirror beside hers. Seeing my gaze over her shoulder, she turned, and we stood there, looking at ourselves in the mirror. A tall, dark young man in a dark blue shirt, black silk neckerchief, black jeans, and tied-down holsters with their walnut-stocked guns. And Olga, in a sea-green gown, filmy and summery-looking. She turned quickly to face me.
What are you doing here? My father will be furious.
He'll have to get over it sometime, and it might as well be right now. She searched my face.
You're still keeping up that foolish talk about marrying me?
It isn't foolish. Have you started buying your trousseau?
Of course not.
You'd better. You'll need something to wear, and I won't have much money for a year or two.
Matt, her face became serious. You'd better go. I'm expecting Morgan.
I took her hands. Don't worry. I promised Cannibal there would be no trouble. And there will be none, no matter what Morgan Park wants to do or tries to do. She was unconvinced and tried to argue, but I was thinking how lovely she was, poised, her lovely throat bare. She was something to set a man's pulses pounding.
Matt, she was angry now, you're not even listening, and don't look at me like that.
How else should a man look at a woman? And why don't we sit down? Is this the way you receive guests at the Bar M? At the Two Bar, we are more thoughtful.
So I've heard,
she said dryly. Her anger faded.
Matt, how do you feel? I mean, those wounds, are they all right?
Not all right, but much better. I'm not ready for Morgan Park yet, but I will be soon. He won't be missed much when he's gone.
Gone?
She was surprised.
Remember that I like Morgan.
Not very much, I shrugged. Yes, gone. This country isn't big enough to hold both of us, even if you weren't in it. She sat down opposite me and her face was flushed a little. She looked at me, then looked away, and neither of us said anything for a long minute.
It's nice here, I said at last.
Your father loves this place, doesn't he?
Yes, only I wish he would be content and stop trying to make it bigger.
Men like your father never seem to learn when they have enough.
You don't talk like a cowhand, Matt.
That's because I read a book once.
Key told me you had been all over the world. He checked up on you. He said you had fought in China and South Africa.
That was a long time ago.
How did you happen to come west?
I was born in the west, and then I always wanted to return to it and have a ranch of my own. But there wasn't anything to hold me down, so I just kept on drifting from place to place. Staying in one place did not suit me unless there was a reason to stay, and there never was before. Tendrils of her dark hair curled against her neck. The day was warm, and I could see tiny beads of perspiration on her upper lip. She stood up suddenly, uneasily.
Matt, you'd better go. Father will be coming, and he'll be furious.
And Morgan Park will be coming, and it doesn't matter in the least whether they come or not. I came here to see you, and as long as they stay out of the way, there'll be no trouble.
But Matt...
She stepped closer to me, and I took her by the elbows. She started to step back, but I drew her to me swiftly. I took her chin and turned her head slightly. She resisted, but the continued pressure forced her chin to come around. She looked at me then, her eyes wide and more beautiful than I would ever have believed eyes could be. And then I kissed her. We stood there clinging together tightly, and then she pulled violently away from me. For an instant she looked at me, and then she moved swiftly to kiss me again. And we were like that when hoofs sounded in the yard. Two horses. We stepped apart, but her eyes were wide and her face was pale when they came through the door, her breast heaving and her white teeth clinging to her lower lip. They came through the door, Rudd McLaren first and then Morgan Park, dwarfing McLaren in spite of the fact that he was a big man. When they saw me, they stopped. Park's face darkened with angry blood. He started toward me, his voice hoarse with fury.
Get out! Get out, I say!
My eyes went past him to McLaren.
Is Park running this place, or are you?
It seems to me he's got a lot of nerve ordering people off the place of Rudd McLaren. McLaren flushed. He didn't like my being there, but he disliked Parks' usurping of authority even more.
That'll do, Morgan. I'll order people out of my own home.
Morgan Parks' face was ugly at that minute, but before he could speak, Cannibal appeared in the door.
Boss, Saber said he was visiting, not hunting trouble. He said he would make no trouble and would go when I asked him. He also said he would make no trouble with Park.
Before McLaren could reply, Olga said quickly,
Father, Mr. Saber is my guest. When the time comes, he will leave. Until then, I wish him to stay.
I won't have him in this house, McLaren said angrily.
He strode to me, the veins in his throat swelling.
Damn you, Saber. You've got a gall to come here after shooting my men, stealing range that rightly belongs to me, and running my cattle out of Cottonwood Wash.
Perhaps, I admitted, there's something in what you say, but I think we have no differences we can't settle without fighting. Your men came after me first. I never wanted trouble with you, Rudd, and I think we can reach a peaceful solution. It took the fire out of him. He was still truculent, still wanting to throw his weight around, but mollified. Right then I sensed the truth about Rudd McLaren. It was not land and property he wanted so much as to be known as the biggest man in the country. He merely knew of no way to get respect and admiration other than through wealth and power. Realizing that gave me an opening. I was talking to Chapin today. If we're going to be safe, we must stop all this fighting. And the only way it can be done is through the leadership of the right man. I think you're that man, McLaren. He was listening, and he liked what he heard.
You're the big man of the community, I added. If you make a move for peace, others will follow. The Pinders won't listen, he protested. You know that. You killed Raleigh, but if you hadn't, Cannibal might have. Jim will never rest until you're dead, and he hates me and all I stand for.
Morgan Park was listening, his eyes hard and watchful. He had never imagined that McLaren and I would talk peace, and if we reached a settlement, his plans were finished.
If Pinder and the CP were alone, they would have to become outlaws to persist in this fight. If the fight continues, all the rustlers in the country will come in here to run off our herds while we fight. Did it ever fail? When honest men fall out, thieves always profit. Moreover, you'll break yourself paying gunmen's wages. From now on, they'll come higher.
Olga was listening with some surprise, and, I believed, with respect. Certainly I had gone farther than I'd ever believed possible. My own instinct is toward fighting, yet I have always been aware of the futility of it. Now I could see that, if the fighting ended, all our problems would be simple and easily settled. The joker in the deck was Morgan Park. He had everything to lose by a settlement, and nothing to gain.
Park interrupted suddenly. I wouldn't trust all this talk, Rudd. Saber sounds good, but he's got some trick in mind. What's he planning? What's he trying to cover?
Morgan,
Olga protested, I'm surprised at you. Matt is sincere, and you know it. I know nothing of the kind, he replied shortly. I'm surprised that you would defend this killer.
He was looking at me as he spoke, and it was then I said the one thing I had wanted to say. The hunch I could not prove.
At least, I replied, my killings have been in fair fights by men trying to kill me. I've never killed a man who had no gun, and who would have been helpless against me in any case.
Morgan Park stiffened, and his face grew livid. Yet I knew from the way his eyes searched my face that he detected the undercurrent of meaning, and he was trying to gauge the depth of my knowledge.
It was Darcy I had in mind, for Darcy had known something about Park, and had been slain for what he knew.
or because he might tell others what he knew. I was sure of that. It isn't only rustlers, I continued to McLaren, but others have schemes that can only bring to success through trouble here. There are those who wish this fight to continue, so they may get rights and claims they could never secure if there was peace. Morgan Park was glaring, fighting for control. He could see that unless he kept his temper and acted quickly, his plans might be ruined. Something of what I'd said apparently touched McLaren, for he was nodding.
"I'll have to think it over," McLaren said. "This is no time to make decisions."
"By all means," turning, I took Olga's arm. "Now, if you'll excuse us." Morgan's face was a study in concentrated fury. He started forward, blood in his eye. Putting Olga hurriedly to one side, I was ready for him, but Cannaval stepped between us.
"Hold it!"
Cannaval's command stopped Park in his tracks.
"That's all, Park. We'll have no trouble here." "What's the matter?" he sneered. "Sabre need a nursemaid now?"
"No." The foreman was stiff. "He gave me his word, and I gave mine. As long as he's on this place, my word holds. If the boss wants him to go, he'll go." In the silence that followed, McLaren turned to me. "Sabre, I've no reason to like you, but you are my daughter's guest, and you talk straight from the shoulder. Remain as long as you like." Park started to speak, but realized he could do nothing. He turned his heavy head, staring at me from under heavy brows. That gaze was cold and deadly.
"We can settle our differences elsewhere, Sabre."
Olga was worried when we got outside.
"You shouldn't have come, Matt. There'll be trouble. Morgan is a bad enemy."
"He was my enemy anyway. That he is a bad enemy, I know. I think another friend of yours found that out." She looked up quickly, real fear in her eyes.
"What do you mean?"
"Your friend Darcy. He comes of a family that does not frighten easily. Did you ever have a note of acknowledgement from him?"
"No."
"Strange. I'd have said such a man would never neglect such an obvious courtesy." We stood together then, looking out at the night and the desert. No words between us, but needing no words. Our hearts beating together. Our blood moving together, feeling the newness of love discovered. The cottonwood leaves brushed their pale green hands together, and their muted whispering seemed in tune with our own thoughts. This was my woman. The one I would walk down the years with. The leaves said that. And my blood said it. And I knew the same thoughts were in her, reluctant as she might be to admit it. "This trouble will pass," I said softly, "as the night will pass. And when it is gone, and the winds have blown the dust away, then I shall take you to Cottonwood Wash. To live." Her hand stayed in mine, and I continued. "We'll build something there to last down the years. Until this will all seem a bad dream. A nightmare dissipated by the morning sunlight."
"But could you ever settle down? Could you stay?"
"Of course. Men don't wander for the love only of wandering. They wander because they're in search of something. A place of one's own. A girl. A job accomplished. It is only you who have mattered since the day I rode into the streets of Hatton's Point and saw you there." Turning toward her, I took her by the elbows and her breath caught. Then came quickly and deeply. Her lips parted slightly as she came into my arms, and I felt her warm body melt against mine. And her lips were warm and seeking, urgent, passionate. My fingers ran into her hair and along her scalp, and her kisses hurt my lips, as mine must have hurt hers. All the fighting, all the waiting, melted into nothingness then. She pulled back suddenly, frightened yet excited, her breast rising and falling as she fought for control.
"This isn't good. We're too violent. We've got to be more calm."
I laughed then, full of the zest of living and loving and seeing the glory of her there in the moonlight.
I laughed and took her arms again.
You're not exactly a calm person.
A flush darkened her face. Well, all right.